geologist couple who write The Catskill Geologist, which you can read every week at thecatskillgeologist.com. They've written books together. They're working on a new book, speaking of pictures at an exhibition, about the Hudson River School of Art and all of the landscapes that were painted. They're doing the field work. They're going to all these places in which painters painted and the things they looked at. And they're describing the geology and biology and plant life and mountains around these. I heard a talk a couple weeks ago at the Carey Institute in which they showed some slides and talked about the research they've done for the book. It's pretty fascinating. The book comes out next year. I'll make sure to talk more about it when it does. But to begin, I asked Robert and Johanna where it all began, where this interest came from. And you're going to hear first from Johanna, and let's get right to it. Here are the Catskills' own Robert and Johanna Titus.
Just let me tell you this to begin with. Our fascination with the Ice Age in glaciers comes about because a short distance from where we live, there is another town, and it's in Bergen County in New Jersey.
Where we grew up.
And it's called Glen Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just Google Glen Rock, New Jersey, you will find out that the major feature there is this giant glacial erratic in the middle of the main street.
Mm-hmm.
So it separates north and south of the main street.
It's right. It's just east of the intersection. East. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So we grew up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from a glacier.
Can you explain what a glacial erratic is or what it looks like?
It could be a pebble all the way up to something the size of a railroad car that has been carried for some distance by a glacier. And then as the glacier melted, it dropped out of that glacier.
You've probably been to Sunset Rock north of North Lake or Boulder Rock south of the old mountain house
site.
Those
are glacial erratics.
Those are two very good glacial erratics.
How large is the one in Glen Rock?
It's
size
large.
Of a garage.
Yeah.
It's probably 20 feet tall and 30 feet from one end to the other.
Yeah.
It's got a monument to the World War II veterans on it and a flagpole in front of it. And my paper route went past it every day.
Well, so how long did it take both of you to figure out that that was more than just a rock or that it didn't just grow as a rock right in that spot?
We just always somehow
yeah,
knew.
We always,
I mean,
yeah.
You see, we've, Johanna and I have both been scientists since we were early grammar school. We both had the calling when we were 6, 7 years old. And so we picked up knowledge of that sort so long ago, and it's almost as if we just were born knowing it. And I'm not being facetious. As scientists, we go back that far. I can remember finding my first fossil when I was 6 years old. And you remember exploring Goffle Brook Park.
Yeah.
The local brook through the local park. Fascinated Johanna with its biology. So we are born and bred scientists through and through. We encourage that in young people today.
Yeah.
Well, and I can see, I mean, your passion is clear. And I think it's a little bit like intoxicating when I hear you talk about your subjects. You're both very, very much natural teachers. And it made me think, I was thinking this morning about how scientists, one of the gifts, especially teaching scientists have, is this real passion for the subject that can bring a student in. And I still remember, I was not a great college student, but I still remember my geology, intro to geology course at the University of Minnesota. That was one of the few courses that I went to every week. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed, there were field trips. But I was also, because I had no background in it, it was a core science course I had to take. It was one of these courses in college that really stuck with me. And Anyway, you two clearly have that natural gift.
What you just said doesn't surprise either one of us. It's a very free geology is an intuitive science. You can, if you know the world around you, you can apply what you've learned in that class almost every day. And of course, with our columns, that's our strategy. We want to give people trained eyes. We want them to see the Catskill Mountains, the Hudson Valley, as it was in the geological past, and as it was, and they never knew that. It's so important for people to know that when they see a boulder, it probably was brought to where you see it by the glacier. And what a revelation that is, and what a wonderful thing it is to know that. And if you have children, to explain it to them, if you have grandchildren, to explain it to them. None of the other sciences, and we love all of the sciences, but none of the other sciences are quite as intuitive as is geology. Maybe biology is a close second.
Depends on what you're talking about. Biology is a big field.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, and to, just to give people an idea that I'm not, I guess, what you would call strictly a biologist. I minored in environmental science in at the beginnings of environmental science that long ago. And so I also took geology. I took environmental geology and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's not like I don't know what he's talking about and he doesn't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, and him being a paleontologist, he knows some biology also. So. And what we don't know, we fill in for each other.
Right. Yeah, we work to get very well together in that score. Johanna is one of the best book researchers I've ever met in my life. I'm a wonderful field geologist. You see how that works. She can search the literature and tell me about things that I found out in the woods. And it rounds it out so very nicely. And it makes for a good newspaper column.
I'm so glad you brought up the idea of all of us regular non-scientists being able to kind of notice landscapes or at least define them in a better way when we're walking through them. I'm curious if, so WGXC is the studio that I work in is in ACRA. I'm in Caro. My in-laws are in Perling. And I'm just curious whether there's any obvious landscapes that I'm walking by and not understanding exactly what they are.
By Bavarian Manor?
Yes. When you go downhill, let's suppose you're on Route 32 near Perling. Off to the east, frequently you'll see broad, very flat landscapes where Route 23 crosses 32. If you look to the east, the landscape is very flat, a little bit marshy. That is the bottom of a glacial lake. That flat surface is literally the bottom of a glacial lake. Stand there and look up about 60 feet into the air at noon when the sun is shining down. And in your mind's eye, in your imagination, you can see the wind blowing ripples across the water above you, the sunshine shining through those ripples. What a marvelous thing it is. That is a flat landscape. It should be dull. It should be boring. It should be absolutely uninteresting until you realize that your 2 feet are standing at the bottom of a lake. Isn't that wonderful?
How long ago did that lake go away?
Go away.
Mm. Oh, glug, glug, glug. About 13,000 years ago, it drained. Yeah. Mm.
Glug, glug, glug.
A little less.
Give a shake.
Thank you. This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Claire, and I'm from Athens, and I'm 8.
I'm Fatia. I'm 9 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, and bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today. We're often joined by our friends, Georgia and Amelia, and they might still join us later today. We'll see if they make an appearance. But for today, we have our newest co-host, Claire, and Atia, who's been with us for a few years now. So we're excited to share some books. But before we dive into talking about the books, we want to talk a little bit about WGXC. Because we are proud programmers of WGXC, and we are really happy and grateful to have space on the airwaves each week to talk about books and to put some youth perspective out over the airwaves. It's one of WGXC's longest running shows and longest running youth shows. There's also some other great youth shows on WGXC that we also love. And we think this is pretty special and want to do all that we can to help keep WGXC alive and well. And so this year we have the Winter 2023 Please Assist Us in Transmission Pledge Drive. And during this drive, we are looking to secure additional sustaining supporters towards our ultimate goal of 5,000 in monthly contributions, which will allow us to end these traditional pledge drives. And so that goal is really close, it's within our grasp. We need to add a minimum of 1,250 in monthly donations during this drive. And thank you to everyone that has donated so far during this pledge drive and to all of the ongoing supporters who maybe have even been supporting for many years now. But we hope those of you listening out there who value community radio and youth voices on the radio and literary themed radio shows such as ours, that you might make a pledge to WGXC. You can do so in two main ways. You can go online to wgxc.org/donate, and you can either make a one-time donation or you can become a sustaining supporter, which is a nice way to give a little bit every month throughout the year. It's beneficial to the station to know that they can count on your support month to month. So you can do that at wgxc.org/donate, or you can give a call in and set up your payment with the WGXC team. You can do that by calling 518-697-7400. We hope that you out there listening will support WGXC if you're already a sustaining supporter, or give throughout the year. Hope that you will consider perhaps another one-time donation or increasing your sustaining support to help WGXC reach your goal. But we're grateful to everybody out there, both donors and listeners, for their support of WGXC and Bound by Books. And yeah, help keep WGXC alive and well. Please assist us in transmission by going online to wgxc.org/donate or calling 518-697-7400. Woo! But on that note, we're going to talk about books a little bit. I'm thinking maybe today we will start with Fatia. What did you want to share today, Fatia?
I was going to share a book that I made. It's called The Rescue to Find the Missing Thing. Once upon a time, there lived a man. His name was Silly because he was always silly. One time, he went in an ocean to catch a boot and couldn't get a nibble of the soup he made. He went outside and found a note. It said, missing thing. He asked people, what's the missing thing? But no one knew until one day he found a person who knew what it was. The mission to save the princess. Whoever did would have half of the kingdom. Then he became greedy. So he went looking for it and found it. So he went inside and found Superman inside. So he touched it and became Superman. And then he went to find it. When he came, he saw a snake. He fought and took the princess. The king was so happy and gave him half of the kingdom. The end.
Very cool. What inspired your writing of that story?
It inspired me because I found lots of stories and I read some of them and a lot of them had princesses. It was really cool. So I wanted to make something like that, but I wanted to make it my own.
Very cool. Is this a picture book? Are there pictures that our radio listeners can't see?
No, there's not that. There's only this picture that I made. It's circles.
Cool. Thank you for sharing. I love hearing your stories. So Claire, what did you want to share today?
I had this book called Magic Book, and it's by Nancy Clerk. And then here is the introduction. When Sparky takes a bite for the difficult smelling bone he dug up in his backyard, he's in for a big surprise. Chomp, chomp, kaboom! Sparky is magically transported to London. What's a puppy to do? Eat, of course. Sniff, sniff, sniff. Sparky's nose leads him to such cheese and dog catchers. His only hope for escape is to take another bite of his bone. His only problem, he's nowhere near it. Will Sparky ever be able to make it home?
Very fun.
And I also have this bookish thing. There was this TV show that I was watching, Simpsons, and I lately just realized that it was that there used to be comic books of it before the actual TV show, and that really surprised me because I never ever knew that there is.
I don't know if I realized that either. I knew that there were comics, but I wasn't sure which came first, the show or the comics. That kind of makes sense.
Comics.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that comics would come first. Interesting. I like the magic bone sounds like a fun book.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind being magically transported to London.
It's like all about this little dog who gets transported to London. And I've only read a little bit of it. It's really good.
I wonder if it's a series.
Oh, it is.
It is. Does he go to like all different places with his magic bone?
Well, yeah, because it looks like there's a series because on the back there's a picture of another one that says Magic Bone. Hmm. And this might be the first one. I don't know. I don't know if all of them start out. So in this one, he finds the bone first. I don't know if he finds the bone all over again in the other ones. Hmm. Or if this is just like the first one. But yeah.
I wonder why the bone is magic. What makes
the bone?
I'm curious how it became magical.
Maybe it's a bone from a magical creature or a dog sorcerer enchanted it.
Could be. Where would you want to go if you had a magic bone that you could chomp on to like travel somewhere?
New York City. So tall.
Fun. What would you do there?
I'd eat sushi and I'd go to the Empire State Building again. I've been there before. And I might try to find out where one of my friends lives there, because one of my friends in the summer, she comes up to upstate New York, and in the winter she stays in New York City. Although she comes up for the holidays, so she might be here now because it's Black History Month.
And it was President's Day too, so maybe over the long weekend. A lot of schools have break week this week.
Yeah,
so who knows? So I want to know from Fatia, where would you want to go if you had a magic bone that could have you travel somewhere?
I'd go all around the world.
Everywhere? Ooh. Lots of chomping.
Interesting. All around the world. That would be really convenient if you could just like chomp on a bone and then they'd be like, I can't. And like they would be like, okay, you can't go on this plane because there's COVID-19. You'd just be like so convenient. You just like chomp on bone and be like,
yeah.
Okay, Mom, I'm going to go to New York City to see my friend Emmy Lou, okay? And she's like, okay, sweetie, just be back by dinner. And I'm just like, chomp. And then just like be like at her house.
Yeah, no jet lag, super cheap form of transportation.
And super fast.
Might be rough on your teeth.
Yeah, you just make, or you could do like really soft, like
gentle bite, gentle nibble. So Amelia actually joined us, and I'm wondering about Amelia, where would you want to go if you could travel by chomping on a magic bone like the dog does?
Japan would be pretty cool, honestly.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool. Yeah, I feel like I would want to use that opportunity, assuming it was limited. I would want to use the opportunity to go somewhere far away so that I can avoid the like long travel. So maybe I'd go
China.
Maybe I'd go to India. Maybe I'd go to Japan. Go do a safari in Africa somewhere. Maybe Kruger could be fun. But anyways, that sounds like a really fun book.
Mm-hmm.
So Amelia, what did you want to share today?
I've been spending time, a lot of time, looking at new releases that I refuse to buy because I have too many books already and I need to read them. But I can tell you about one of the releases I found that sounds really interesting. It's called His Black Tongue, A Medieval Horror by Michele Luthi, which takes place in the fictional town of Enfer in medieval Europe, where the description reads, "Dead things have been found in the fields of Enfer, a god-fearing town north of Reims. Not just dead things, but twisted forms, unholy shapes, and there are rumors, too, of a blasphemous union and a fell of creatures that haunt the night. Yet, even as plague and witches and witch pyres blacken the sky, the town remains untouched by the malady that has already claimed thousands and will claim thousands more. It is here in Enfer that an old Franciscan friar and his ward take shelter from a storm. It is here in this little town at the edge of civilization that they will have their faith truly tested." And I thought, that sounds really cool. And I put it on my wish list.
That sounds cool.
Because when you can't put books in your house, you can always put them on your Amazon wish list.
It's true. Add to your never-ending to-read list. I can't imagine ever having a time when I had nothing on my to-read list.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many books.
A very scary way to live, to have nothing to come next.
Yep, that'd be rough. I also have a book that I could share. I've mentioned this book before as a book that I was wanting to read, but I'd not read it yet. But I finally got around, I think last month maybe, to reading the book Whiteout, which is a book for teens. It's a love story set during a whiteout, so at a time when there was a big snowstorm and everything kind of shut down. And it's written by multiple authors: Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. And this is their second book that they've written together that's sort of a similar love story that comes together over a distinct period of time during the first one's a blackout, so all the power goes out, and each author took on a story of different teens, sort of different love stories taking part around New York City, and how they all kind of come together at the end. And this one is set in Atlanta, Georgia during a whiteout, during a blizzard, and everything sort of shuts down. And the frame story for this one is that there are two characters who are two teens in love, Stevie and Sola, and Stevie is really into science. They're in AP chemistry, and for a project, they make a hypothesis that love is simply a biological response built into human brains for the survival of the species, which is not especially romantic, and so Sola is pretty upset about that. And then they're supposed to have a coming out party together with family, and Stevie accidentally messes that up. And so Sola is really hurt and upset and gives Stevie an ultimatum that by a certain day and time, they have to explain what happened at the dinner and then prove sort of their love, that they believe in love and that they love Sola. And so there's been this deadline, and Stevie's been planning out how to like make things right by Sola, and then everything shuts down due to the snowstorm. So it's sort of like they're trying to figure out how to pull something off still despite these obstacles, and their friends are all trying to help as well, but their friends are kind of stranded at different spots throughout the city. You sort of get little stories about each of the characters and how their night unfolds. And it was really fun. I like these stories that kind of give you like little bits about characters. They're almost like short stories, but then they kind of come together at different points. And I feel like this one, the first one that I read, I think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, with Blackout, it was really clear which author wrote which stories. So like there'd be different chapters that would tell a different story. And then there was one author whose story kept coming back to it throughout the book. But then this